Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I am culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Eric Gardner at Puck, Puck.news. I was just telling Eric before we started that I have been a subscriber to Puck since just about day one. It's if you are interested in business of Hollywood stuff, if you're listening to this show, you probably are. You got to sign up for Matt Bellany's newsletter, though. It's very good. And Eric is frequently featured in it. We're going to be talking about one of your stories in Puck today for this newsletter. But thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. It's great to be with you.
All right. So we have we're going to get into the weeds here. It's going to be very technical. It's going to be fun and interesting, though, I promise. But you're going to want to hang with me here for a second. But just to give you a little tease before we get to the meat of it. This is a fascinating story about Warner Brothers using copyright law to essentially get a spoiler removed from the internet. And we're gonna get to how this all came about in a second. But before we do that, Eric, I was hoping you could set the stage for us by explaining what the DMCA is and how it works, because I think this is the kind of key. If you don't understand DMCA, I don't think nothing that comes after will make sense. So talk to me like I'm an idiot. Explain to me what the DMCA is and how it works.
Sure. So DMCA stands for Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And you can tell by the word millennium that we are talking about a law that was passed right before the turn of the millennium. This was in the mid-90s when the internet was bubbling up and people were concerned about, you know, how mass digital distribution would affect property rights. This was the time, if you remember, when Napster came on the scene, and all these copyright holders were freaking out. But everyone also realized the mammoth potential of the internet. And so there was basically a compromise that was set forth. So they amended copyright law, which had last been amended in the mid 70s. And they came up with this regime where if you're an internet service provider, you can be provided notice that there's something that's copyright infringing on your network, and then you have some sort of obligation to take it down. And within those, boundaries, there's a lot of nuance and a lot of debate, but that's essentially it. Where you're a copyright holder, you spot something online that's of concern to you, and you say, "Hey, this is mine. I want it down." And then the ISP has to take it down. Now, it gets a little more nuanced, like I said. There's a process where first the copyright holder submits a notification that something's infringing. And then if you're the person that has posted that material, you're allowed to provide a counter notice to say, "Hey, no, this isn't quite right. This is actually legit, and I own the copyright for it." And so once the counter notice is filed, the stuff can go back online. And then, you know, what happens is that the internet service provider, they are kind of immunized from liability. And the copyright holder has then the choice of going into court and filing a copyright lawsuit against the person. But, that doesn't often happen. What usually happens is, someone sends a takedown notice and things are taken down right away. And time goes by and nothing happens. But, on a rare occasion, things do go amiss.
Just to expand upon this very slightly, one of the roles of the DMCA is to give companies like YouTube or Twitter or whoever, Google, a level of immunity by essentially giving them a warning to say, "Hey, we have found something that is on your servers. It shouldn't be. Please take it down for us," right? Like that's as such, it's kind of in their interest to speedily remove the property, because otherwise then they risk essentially getting sued for lots of money, right?
Yeah, well, there's two things that are happening here. One, it's the copyright holders know their own works best, better than anyone else. So if you're an ISP, you know, you like Twitter or what used to be Twitter or, you know, Facebook or something like that, you might see something. It might seem infringing, but you're not quite sure. So this gives you confidence to know that, yes, someone is claiming it as their own. The second thing I would say is that, you know, these networks are vast and sometimes it's really hard to police everyone that's on their network, everything that's going up. So, you know, this gives an opportunity for you know, someone to come in and help out and say, hey, these are, you know, what's infringing. This is what you need to do something about. This is what you need to be aware of. And you know, and since, you know, the 1990s when the stuff, you know, started to come up, we've had developments like fingerprinting technology and all these various ways where things aren't just as simple as someone sending a takedown notice anymore. That usually is kind of just one part of the whole process for how these things play out.
Okay. And then one of the things that you mentioned in your piece is that there's an assumption of good faith on the part of the takedown, the person filing the takedown notice or the company filing the takedown notice. The courts say to file one of these, you have to be acting in good faith or you could potentially find yourself liable, right?
Right. You have to attest to good faith that the material that you're claiming is indeed your own, that it's copyrighted, that what appears is infringing. And you also have to attest that, you know, you've considered that it could be fair use that and that sort of thing. So that's basically, you know, the obligation there.
Okay. All right. So now let's go to the actual meat of the story. Cause again, this is a really interesting, fight. I find this sort of thing very fascinating. I hope everybody else does because I'm very into it. What did Warner Brothers want taken down? What was it that they got wind of that they wanted removed from the internet, claiming it to be a violation of their copyright?
Well, yeah, in this instance, what I wrote about was, you know, some videos had started appearing that gave the end to the premiere episode of the HBO series Lanterns, which just premiered a couple of weeks ago. This was back a few months ago. So, you know, there's a lot of speculation. This was a high profile project by Damon Lindelof, who did Lost and, you know, Watchmen and a bunch of other. So there was a lot of attention on this. And obviously it's a DC Comics property, you know, superhero. You know, a lot of people were eagerly looking forward to this. And the spoiler, which, you know, I won't spoil for anyone who hasn't seen the show, but it had a big plot development from that first episode. And so, you know, those who had kind of noted what had happened, or speculated about what had happened, had their videos taken down off of various platforms, pursuant to a takedown notice from Warner.
Now, you know, there are instances where takedown notices are pretty obvious and pretty straightforward, right? If somebody had posted 2 months ahead of time the last 5 minutes of Lanterns, for instance, it would be a pretty clear, like, okay, you can't. First off, how did you get access to this? Why is it posted? We're going to take that down. I think that's straightforward. I don't think anybody would have any issue with that. The trick here is that that is not what happened, right? Like, they did not have any of the actual footage. And my understanding, and maybe you're clear this up, is that they didn't have access to scripts or, you know, previews or anything like that. This was pure speculation that was put together from promotional stills, more or less guessing what was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I went into this kind of, you know, assuming that there was a big misunderstanding that you know, they must have posted something that was copyrighted, like some promotional material that Warner was just being extra careful about. Maybe it got flagged by one of those automatic screens, that fingerprinting technology that I had referenced before. And I was just caught up in some sort of dragnet. I didn't go in, you know, expecting like, oh, this was really about the studio trying to squelch spoilers. But indeed, in their DMC takedown notices, they write explicitly, this is, you know, people discussing spoilers and something like that. And then, you know, I, you know, did some more digging, and I, you know, found that indeed it was true that they had basically reacted out of people, discussing advance of the plot. So yeah, that was something that kind of surprised me.
And this had real consequences for at least one of the entities who received the takedown notice, right? Cosmic Book News, for instance, was locked out of their account during a pretty important period of time for them, right?
Yeah, during Comic-Con, which is, you know, in their world, kind of the biggest event of the year. You know, he has, you know, quite a followership. You know, people who follow him, a lot of subscribers. He was supposed to go to the core panel on that Lanterns show. It was all a big headache for him.
And that in turn has like real financial implications, right? I mean, like there is an actual loss he can theoretically measure to say this has hurt me.
He says that's hurt his business. I haven't, you know, verified that. I don't know. I don't know what financials he gets and stuff like that. But yes, he tells me that it hurt his business.
Okay, so this in and of itself is pretty interesting, but there is actual precedent surrounding this sort of thing, right? Let's run through some of the older court cases that may or may not hold here, because this was one of the most interesting parts of your newsletter, was just like, oh, there is actual spoiler law, kind of.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was that this was not the first thing that, I mean, the only reason I knew about this was because, you know, one, I had written about a Warner Brothers case that's going on in court right now involving a YouTuber who posted a review of the Batman and then claimed that Warner Brothers had taken it down because his review was negative, and he filed a counter notice, and then it spilled into court. And that case is still ongoing. And the editor of Cosmic Book News saw that and wrote in. But I also had been intrigued by something that was happening in Japan, where I had read about someone who was being criminally prosecuted for posting spoilers and for posting, like, you know, very detailed recaps. And so I started thinking about, you know, maybe there's some sort of trend going on here. I had never considered the fact that someone could go to jail over some of this. And then beyond that, I was on the lookout for ways in which studios might be using anti-piracy tools, not just to crack down on spoilers, but for, you know, all sorts of kind of negative buzz going into the opening weeks of their film and TV projects, because it must be enormously tempting to do that. These things cost a lot of money to produce. The social media carries these days, and, you know, by the click of a couple of buttons, you can, get something really bad off the internet. And, you know, indeed, there does seem to be this problem going on in India right now. Some producers filed for injunctions in advance of their opening weekends. I had been considering this topic for months before finally writing about it, but it was something that I was on the definitely on the lookout for.
Let's go through a couple of these in slightly greater detail, because I do think they present interesting different issues here. The first one I want to talk about is the Japanese one, which is as you mentioned, like a man has been he was sentenced to jail. It was suspended, I believe, 90 days in prison, something like that. But that's a wild one, though. It is also the argument that was made was the descriptions of the episodes were so detailed that they essentially worked as stand-ins for the product themselves, right? Yes. It was almost like I wrote such a detailed, write-up of the first season of The Sopranos that you don't actually need to buy The Sopranos. You don't need to watch it. You could just read this and get the whole thing, which is, I think that's at least, you could make an argument that that's a copyright violation, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't happen in Japan. There was a case that I referenced in my story going back to the 1990s where it went up to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals involving an unauthorized book about the TV show Twin Peaks. Similar thing, very detailed, episode by episode, plot synopsis. You go into exactly what happened. And at some point where you describe something so detailed, it does become maybe a market substitute for actually enjoying the product. I still think that it's kind of borderline, because even if someone described to me, what was in Chris Nolan's Odyssey, it wouldn't stop me from going to see it. But when you consider what's fair use, one of the factors for fair use is market harm. And you can certainly see that tipping more towards the producer's way, the copyright owner's way. You could also maybe see it as less transformative. I mean, something that just, does something like give detailed plots without really any sort of criticism or commentary about the episode itself. I mean, it sounds to me like it may edge towards copyright infringement. That doesn't necessarily mean someone should go to jail for it, but certainly you can make the case that is a copyright violation.
Yeah. Well, I may be wrong about this. I think you basically can't go to prison in America for copyright infringement unless you're mass producing and selling them.
There is actually a criminal aspect to the copyright code, but you're right. Generally, it's rarely invoked. In times when it would be invoked are, when there is mass piracy, for instance, that character Kim.com, who still after 15, 16 years, is waiting extradition, but he's waiting extradition on criminal copyright charges for violating the studio's copyights.
Right. Yeah. All right. So that's one. The Batman review is very interesting to me because this is one that feels like a pretty more clear cut instance of fair use of a critic has put together a video that is negative and the studio, what was the studio's argument for taking it down? Just that he used too much material from the film? What was the argument?
Well, that's interesting too, because their arguments have shifted a little bit. When it got to court, they said, look, he's using the poster. He's using promotional materials. And the judge basically came back and said, wait, you didn't say that originally. You didn't say that in the DMC notice. It's kind of like too late for you now to be making some ad hoc explanation of that. They also argue that, they had a good faith belief that what he was doing was infringing. Like, spoilers may be infringing or they may not be infringing, but if as long as they have a good faith belief that what's being posted is infringing, that clears them of liability for misrepresenting their copyright. So they've made that argument. That hasn't been enough to kill the misrepresentation lawsuit at the start of things, but who knows, like as things go on and there's evidence collected, maybe it even gets the trial, but like it's possible that a judge, a jury later on says, there's just no evidence that we conclude that Warner Brothers acted in bad faith there. And then, the other argument probably will be, even if there was some sort of misrepresentation, there wasn't really any harm. The guy was able to, file a counter notice and get his video back up. And how many views did it actually make, like, you know, mm-hmm. did it really hurt his business and sort of thing. I guess my point would be, like, the downside for making a bad claim right now doesn't necessarily beat the upside.
This is really important, though, I think, right? Which is that, you know, I had a former FCC general counsel on the other day, and one thing that came up is that the process is often the punishment, and the process here of having a video taken down and then having to go to the effort to put it back up and losing whatever time, you know, clicks, money, ad revenue, whatever, is onerous, and the person or company filing the claim gets their relief almost immediately, strikes me, at least, as a real imbalance of power in terms of how this should be working.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what they want is kind of that momentary interruption, and so they get it. That's the advantage of the process. From there are, you know, reasons why to have this system. But you know, it's not foolproof, and people can take advantage of it. And so, yes, on these kind of edge cases, which hopefully, but possibly could be, you know, it's concerning.
Now, what's the deal with the Indian movie reviews being this is one that was totally new. I had not heard about this at all. And it strikes fear into my heart as a film critic. I would like to not be, you know, sentenced in absentia in India or wherever. What's going on there?
Yeah. So, you know, basically their films were coming out. Some people got advance copies of it. They posted their reviews, and then the producers would go to court and they'd obtain these, like, ex parte injunctions that you know, ordered the reviews down. and you know, it's incredulous. I mean, like, in this country, we believe that there shouldn't be prior restraints. And so generally, courts are very loath to order something off the internet unless I mean, it rises to the highest emergency. Mm-hmm. But other countries don't have those sorts of First Amendment protecting things. And so here it seems, and I will admit that, you know, I haven't read every single legal paper here, but it does seem like the producers there were taking advantage of the system there to get courts to, you know, err on the side of their, you know, their so-called rights to property, mm-hmm. rather than the speech.
All right, you make a very important point here, and this is the reason I wanted to have you on today to talk about this, really, because in America we have a presumption of speech. In America, the copyright is designed to protect the commercial exploitation of a thing, it's not designed to stifle speech. And what seems to be happening here, the pattern of suits and takedown notices that you are pointing to does look suspiciously like an effort to use copyright law to try and squelch speech, which is something that, you know, the anti-DMCA people were screaming about at the start. Like, this will be used to hurt speech. This will not be used correctly, and it will be a curtailment of freedom of speech. And I think the DMCA mostly works. It seems to pretty much do its job, and there are things around the edges. But this does seem like an escalation in a real and troubling way.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And there's a segment out there that's called the copy left, and they always complain about any, like, copyright law, and they always believe, like, copyright can be used to squelch speech. And I'm not a copy lefter, and I also agree that the DMCA has mostly you know, been useful and good, and you know, it's raised hard questions, but overall I think it's been fine. I mean, my interest and concern over this is that, you know, we are entering an age where AI is making speech, like, so much more prevalent and potentially bad speech, and people are going to be tempted to use to come up with a DMCA kind of regime for getting rid of deepfakes and all sorts of other AI speech. And in reverse, there's going to be the temptation to use these mechanisms to kind of squelch unflattering speech. People are very concerned about their reputations for understandable reasons. Reputation travels online. It's hard to clean up, bad speech about you. In a different realm, like I also write a lot about defamation law. We're seeing so many defamation cases these days. And I just kind of worry that the temptation will be there to use these tools to, as power plays to get rid of stuff. That's one of the reasons why I think that this case really goes beyond spoilers and goes to something that should, be of concern for anyone who is making laws that try to balance these concerns.
Yeah. One of the things I mentioned before we started talking is, you see efforts occasionally in the political realm to use copyright to stop either speech or, something. For instance, a trick that is occasionally used to questionable effect. I don't even know how real this is. It feels like an urban legend almost.
Well, I know what you're going to say, and it definitely is real.
But if somebody's out there doing a live stream of a political rally and you don't like that person and you don't like their commentary, you go up to them and you blast Taylor Swift and then their stream immediately, becomes illegal because they're broadcasting music that's under copyright, right? Like that strikes me again. This is one of these weird things where that is not what copyright law is meant to protect. This is not what is the correct way to being. And it feels like a real instance of trying to squelch speech through illicit copyright enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely. I would also, I also want to point out that the penalties for copyright infringement, the statutory penalties, are up to $150,000 per infringement. So a lot of these platforms become very careful with this sort of thing. So they've instituted things like I've mentioned before, fingerprinting technology, mm-hmm. and so people have learned they can abuse the system by playing copyrighted music that gets picked up by the fingerprinting technology. And so all these things are woven together, and people have become very sophisticated about this sort of thing, and they understand a lot about it,
Yeah. But I don't know. It's just one of these things where it feels like we have a real problem on our hands, potentially. Maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe this is just an unnecessary panic, but it does feel like, look, you've got the FCC out there, constantly jawboning, trying to get Jimmy Kimmel off the air or whatever. You've got efforts being made in pretty regular ways to have speech taken down that certain people don't like. And that, this just feels like another arrow in that quiver.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not sure what to do with about it. I mean, the speech, it has repercussions these days. Reputation travels, and there's a lot of misinformation out there, there's a lot of dueling concerns here, and so you want platforms to be vigilant about it and to take their jobs seriously. I mean, just a few days ago, Meta company came to a big settlement over speech that was harming children. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you also want speech to, we believe in free speech, and we want things to flourish. So it's definitely not easy. There's no simple solution here. I am not trying to moralize and say this is the right way, and Warner Brothers or whatever is wrong. what I am saying is that this temptation out there, and we should all be concerned about, you know, how these tools are used and leveraged.
Yeah. All right. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if you think there's anything folks should know about this or any other element of, you know, the fun legal world of copyright takedown notices. I told you guys this was going to be more interesting than that very dry description sounds, but this is a fun episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what I'd say is that, like I said, it's expanding. You know, we talked a lot about copyright takedowns. You know, people also have trademarks, and they have their rights to their name and image, and so we're seeing a lot of, you know, cease and desist letters, and a lot of takedowns in kind of like other modes of law, and so. This stuff is increasing, and you know we're going to be talking more about this going forward.
Yeah, undoubtedly. All right, Eric, thanks for being on today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and we'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.